Is Data a blessing or a curse? Brought to you by Adastra, this is a must-listen podcast that inspires and advises people who are serious about digitalization. They decided to move to the cloud. Their goal is to sell data as a product. The mid-sized, family-owned German company engages in the manufacture of machinery and instrumentation. Its name is Netsch, and my today guest is Stefan Lautenschlager, Head of Business Intelligence and Analytics. Stefan, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Eva. Great to be here.
At the beginning, we should frame the story with what Netsch does. Mm-hmm. So what's your core business?
Exactly. So the Netsch Group consists of three business units. The first and largest one is Pumps and Systems. They are operating globally and, well, our pumps, so they're putting one fluid from place A to place B. Basically anything besides water, so living fish, oil, gas, other kind of liquids like milk as well. And, well, operating globally, making systems for grinding there as well, partly. The larger part of our grinding is coming from the second business unit, grinding and dispersing, which takes anything that is large, needs to be made small, and mixed into something. So gold, granite, any kind of coffee beans, mm-hmm. things that we all love, paints, coatings, all of these kind of things. And the third one, and smallest business unit, but also very relevant one, is analyzing and testing. They are basically producing lab equipment for material testing and are experts in material analysis. So for NASA, when they're shooting up a rocket into the sky, we want to know how and if the metal deforms.
So if you are a manufacturer, so you produce physical stuff, why did you decide to go to the cloud?
It's always shifting. So technology is supporting every kind of business process that we have, from purchasing over the sales part, even to production. We always have data coming up. We always looking to get the most out of our data, analyze it, and improve our processes. And also for our products, things are shifting. So recently, or of the last couple of decades, people have bought a pump, have been paying for the material itself, for the product itself. Mm-hmm. And if the pump breaks down, our service technicians would be coming there, would be replacing spare parts, would be fixing the pump. Nowadays, companies want to buy the service of having a liquid transported from A to B. For that, we need a lot of data, we need a lot of analytics as well.
So you don't sell them the pump itself, but the service?
Right now we do, but service is a large possibility and a could be a huge shift in our business model as well.
Moving to the cloud anyway is not an easy decision, a cheap decision. So what was like the last straw when you decided to really go to the cloud and spend all the money on that shift?
Exactly. So we are currently working in terms of business intelligence analytics a lot with SAP, with BW, and are always looking to always checking the market, what's happening in terms of AWS, in Google Cloud, on SAP DataSphere, on Microsoft Azure. And what we can see as a trend over the last couple of years is that all of these large-scale companies, all of these hyperscalers, have been investing heavily into the cloud, and most features that are coming in are, of course, always going into the cloud. And well, the biggest decision is always besides the features, is always the financial aspect. Sometimes it pays off to have everything in your own premises, everything on hand, but you are not seeing the costs for the likes of security, for the likes of backups, for the network that you need to take care of. In cloud, everything is transparent, and well, there's of course quite a drastic change in the costs. You pay as you go.
Okay, you decided for Microsoft Intelligent Data Platform.
Correct.
Was it tough to convince the management to do that?
So we've got two different strategic partners. One is SAP that we have for our ERP systems throughout all the three different business units. And the other one is Microsoft for anything that's more cloud-related in terms of that. When I started off at Netsch, I was looking into a landscape of 12 different front-end tools, from SAP Lumira to Power BI to a lot of PowerPoint and Excel, frankly, as well, and a lot of other smaller tools like Soho and so on. And my first step, my first goal was to eliminate most of them and really focus on one tool. the decision was made very early that we would be going into Power BI, which was back then the best obvious choice for us. And this decision stuck. So Power BI now is established as the number one tool for front-end reporting in the Netsch group. And, well, there are some technical difficulties between SAP BW specifically and Microsoft. The connectors are not really matching too well. So we are also looking into how do we make this kind of gap between the database layer and the reporting layer shorter, how this is getting more efficient. Plus, back when we made the decision for the Microsoft Data Intelligent Data Platform, Microsoft had the most features, had the most things coming in. They were just acquiring ChatGPT at the time. And we saw a lot of potential there. We saw Fabric coming up. We saw a lot of different AI and self-service tools coming up. So Microsoft was the furthest, and I believe still is the furthest, when it comes to business intelligence analytics in a cloud scenario.
Did you need to calculate the ROI of this decision, or was it really a high-level strategic decision in the terms of, yes, we are moving to the cloud because we need to?
So we had the IT strategy, which was saying cloud first, not cloud only. So we still have some on-premise topics, but cloud first. So in this case, for us, the decision was to compare different cloud providers and have an ROI on all of them. But it was clear for us that we would be moving into the cloud. So it was mainly strategical. But of course, we calculated an ROI to support the decision.
How easy or tough was to calculate the ROI for the all hyperscalers? Because I think, or I believe, it's not an easy job.
Always is, yeah. So we had help of Adastra, actually. So to help us with the total cost of ownership calculation for the tools, they helped us set up, okay, we need X amounts of VMs, we need Synapse here, we need an Azure Data Factory on the other hand, we will need a data lake, we will need all of the different resources inside Azure. Basically packing them all together, creating an entire diagram, and then checking for the estimated amount of data that's coming in, the estimated amount of processing power that we need, how much we would pay for this. So this helped a lot to get an ROI, or to basically get a total cost of ownership over a couple of years, but it's always an estimation. You never know how things are changing. We saw a lot faster adoption to our new products than we had expected. A lot more data coming in. We're doing a lot of data quality
topics. Okay, so those are like the tangible results you are already able to see?
Exactly, yeah, already.
How long after implementation you are now? So I'm asking because if you are already seeing the tangible results, it seems to be like pretty fast.
Yeah, we started around a year ago, a year and a half ago. We're not fully done yet with our full transformation, but I have already done a lot of use cases with productive data. So just to highlight two of them, one was to check our data quality, because probably a problem that a lot of mid-sized companies in Germany have, especially family-owned ones, a lot of decisions were made from gut feeling, and now we want to rely on data. If the data quality isn't that good, well,
yeah, your decisions aren't good as well.
It is like that, exactly. So our first topic was, hey, if you want to have good, reliable decisions and we want to implement them sustainably, we would need a great data quality. This is one part cultural change to tell the people, hey, if you input the wrong data, somebody has to fix it. Typically my team here in Brazil, the data engineers who have to clean the data there. On the other hand, it's a technical topic as well to support them, to give them something on the hand to see what data points are wrong and need to be fixed. So we started off with material data for one of our business units to practically check, hey, this is a spare part, it's a screw, and the weight is labeled as 500 kilograms. This obviously has to be wrong just by a similar rule set. We're applying some machine learning in this solution as well to see things that have been classified right and have some expected weight, some expected cost, some expected material. Anything, any kind of value. And we're labeling these kind of wrong data points, putting them into Power BI and showing them directly to the input givers, to the users, to fix the data. And we've already seen an increase in data quality of 24% within the last year, and a lot of fewer errors that are being made when data is input.
How do you measure the data quality? If you say it's 24% better, so it's based on which KPIs?
So we've got a KPI for timeliness, which is when was it created, when was it last touched. This is one of them. It's the completeness, which is if all of the data is filled 100%, that'd be amazing. It's the dream of any kind of person working in data. Usually we don't have that because a lot of fields are optional. This is the accuracy of the data, meaning is the data actually right that's in there? And combining these together, we've getting one KPI for basically, the overall data quality. Always depending on the data set. So I mentioned material data would work slightly different for customer data, which we're currently working on, or supplier data.
And you were talking about 12 reporting tools or self-service tools you used. So now the only tool is Power BI, right?
Exactly. It's the only one that we're pushing. There are still some others, but for singular reports that are being phased out now in 2025, we've got that that goal for us. And yeah, pretty much we're bringing in trainings, we're pushing the tool, we're only supporting Power BI, we're not supporting any other tools anymore. So people are soft forced to use it. And with different data culture initiatives that we have group wide, we're always putting Power BI at the forefront.
You've just mentioned one pretty important thing, culture data initiative. What does it mean? Because this should be one of my question as well. How did you make the people to believe that you are on the right path?
Exactly. So how I see business intelligence and analytics, it's always business first. We divide it into, at Netsch at least, we divide it into three different topics. One is business. This is data quality. This is anything tangible. So the return on investment that you are talking about, use cases, data products. This is the technology, which is the things that nobody sees inside the business. So like we talked about, the Microsoft Data Intelligent Data Platform, Power BI, security topics. And then the most important one, the glue in between those two, is the organizational path. And organization for us, there means trainings, this means different kind of communications, this means upskilling, this means enablement of the people. So what we're doing concretely now for data culture is that we have a business intelligence analytics community, which takes place every 4 weeks. And we're bringing in different people from the business to present their use cases. We are bringing in people from Microsoft, from SAP as well, to talk about new technologies. We are bringing in different kind of trends. We're bringing in basically in a 1 hour format anything that people who are interested in data would like to see. And this year we'll be launching a few different formats as well, like a mini podcast, or people are using Instagram, are using YouTube Shorts, are using TikTok now. So we want to have condensed information in just like a 30-second or 1 minute clip. So we are creating small videos now, short videos, just about data. What is a warehouse? What is SAP? What's a transaction? What is Power BI? What can it do? What's reporting? What's machine learning? Just in a very small condensed format.
Oh, this is awesome. Which channels do you use for that kind of education?
We use internal ones, so mainly Microsoft Stream for this one. And, well, Teams is everybody who has access to it, well, will be accessing Teams.
What's the response from that company? Are the people like, do you see in numbers that the people are watching those videos and consuming those stuff?
Definitely, yeah. So Netsch has around 5,000 people globally. Now we are only hosting it once. So mainly towards the Western side of the world, so the Americas, Europe, leaving out Asia a bit. But we'll be changing that because we're recording all of the things and people in Asia are watching it too. So from those 5,000 people, around 50 to 100 are always tuning in to see those monthly sessions. And we have another 30 to 40 watching the videos afterwards, which is quite a good number, considering that most of our colleagues are working in production, don't have access to a PC, don't need to care too much about the data. They need to care of the machines or servicing the machines. But from the people who are working with data, I believe you got everybody who is interested inside this condensed group.
What were the most significant challenges to overcome from your perspective?
Was, of course, the buy-in. So people were used to the tools. very, very used to the tools. So if you're locked in into Soho and you've been working with that tool for the last 10 years, and you know exactly where to click, exactly what to do, and you know the performance, how it's doing, you don't know that you have colleagues sitting behind putting everything in Excel and uploading once a day. We need to educate the people first and tell them, hey, why is Power BI better? Because replacing one front-end tool with another one doesn't have any immediate business benefit, right? At least not for their users.
Or maybe the benefit is negative, right, in the first weeks.
Exactly. So there we need to have a lot of political power. Luckily, we were sponsored directly from the CFO of the company, who helped us push the topics. The management buy-in was always there. Mm-hmm. And that helped us with the buy-in from other users. And yeah, having those success stories, having the first really well-performing reports, having reports where 1,000 people are looking into every month, mm-hmm. And having Power BI as a front-end tool, people are getting used to the interface, people are getting used to the performance, are getting used to where to click, how it works, how to export data as well. So they are more and more buying into the topic. This was the initial challenge.
If I understood it well, your management was 100% bought in, right?
Exactly.
So this was great support for all the mm-hmm. other layers of employees.
Absolutely. So we've got all of the buy-in from mainly the three most important positions, which was the director of controlling. Mm-hmm. So anything that has financial topics behind them was my former boss. So she was really buying into the topic. Secondly was the director of IT. So we've got the technical side covered as well. And for all the other management topics for the users, basically, we had the CFO and by that also the CEO of the company who was pushing and backing us up.
Pretty important role or roles played the Adastranas and Microsoft Fast Track teams, mm-hmm. right? What did you need them for?
So in parallel of deciding for which one we're going to, basically mapping out the strategy. Mm-hmm. I was building a team in the south of Brazil. So all of these guys were very new into the company. While they are very experienced in what they are doing, data engineers, data scientists, project managers, data analysts as well, they didn't know Netsch yet. Mm-hmm. So of course we were relying on an external partner and Microsoft, we asked them directly as a strategic partner, who can we use? Because you, Microsoft, you don't implement. You have your partner network. They gave us a few addresses, a few companies. Adastra was the most convincing to us. And Adastra was then taking care of practically creating the resources, taking care of the network topics, giving some consultancy behind as well, taking care of continuous integration, continuous development through DevOps, setting up all of the pipelines there, creating the first real use case together with us, working on SAP BW and in parallel on Microsoft Azure. So we have one continuous path. So Adastra was really the key in the beginning to help us head to the road. And the Microsoft Fast Track teams were also very important, but Adastra did have the skill set that we needed, especially like there was going into really deep details. It was going into what kind of protocols are used when we communicate from SAP BW to Azure Data Factory or to Synapse. Very, very complicated and detailed stuff that we used Microsoft because, they still have the bigger name and it was more about convincing our internal IT operations teams mm-hmm. That the way that Adastra is proposing is the right one.
Okay, so just to gain their trust, right?
Exactly.
What's your vision now? I was mentioning in the beginning that you would like to sell the data as a product or as mm-hmm. a service. What does it mean in terms of your core business?
Exactly. So we are firstly serving the Netsch Group. So we're not selling any products outside yet. We had some ideas. We had some interviews with different companies of selling one of our internal solutions, which is basically a detector if any kind of third parties are undermining your spare parts business, mm-hmm. Which is working very well for us, but it may not work so well for other companies, but it could be. So we were thinking of selling this one, and I still have I still have trust and I still see the chance, opportunity to create this kind of product or different products that we use internally as a software as a service product that other people can bring the data, plug them in, get the algorithms, machine learning mainly behind it, and create their own, get their own benefits from it.
Okay, so does it mean that you are like going or achieving for something like data mesh or data democracy in
so
Edge?
Internally, it's going to be different. So this was the external part. Internally, we still have a long way to go. So we started off with the sales part because for us, everything revolves around an order. And now we're going more into production. We're going more into financial key figures. We're going into purchasing as well.
Mm-hmm.
So for us, it's now the time to really scale out our solution, get as much data as we can into our platform and provide as much use cases as we can in a very fast time. This is our current focus.
Internally.
Exactly. A data mesh is very interesting for us. We are not quite there yet with the skilling of our company, but we keep this as a vision. So we do see smaller teams that are already working very heavily on Power BI, that they are already using self-service business analytics. And those would be the perfect users to also go one step further, use SQL, use smaller machine learning components, use more self-service tools to create their own solutions. Right now, we're still very centralized with the team that we have in Brazil. But for front-end, we're already seeing the first steps into self-service analytics.
How long did you guess you would need to, I don't want to say achieve because it's probably always a continuous job, but to be much more data decentralized or have democratized data?
It's actually a tough one because we see the economic situation in Germany. We also see that we don't find too many tech positions in where we are located in Germany, being in Selb and Walkreiburg. One is too far away from the big centers. The other one is too close to the big centers. So either we don't have people there or the people are rather moving to where they can earn more money. So we see most of our growth actually outside of Germany, more in our international areas. There, if we manage to achieve people who have a skill set in data, or who are at least willing to, because we are also providing trainings, we are also skilling them up, we would be rather quick. So I have the first successes this year already. And once these successes show and we can showcase them on our internal communication platforms, then this could be snowballing. So our focus on this year is to create the first success cases and then scale it out, as you said, over the next couple of years.
Okay, and if we come back to the like external data use or monetization of your data in the external way, what are the use cases there?
So one I mentioned in the beginning is a mix of IoT data and data analytics. So for example, we would measure, instead of selling the pump directly, we could be thinking about selling the service of transporting liquid from A to B, measuring that, shutting off the pump remotely if they don't need it right now, or measuring the throughput basically and charging by the
number. Okay, so if I understand it well, you sell the pump to the customer,
right,
and
now,
then thanks to the IoT sensors, you would be able to like provide them with the data sets which are important for their business.
Other way around. So right now we're selling the pump to the customer and servicing it. The customer is paying for the service as well. And we could change this around and say, hey, as a customer, I'm Coca-Cola. I need to transport my beverage from A to B. Instead of buying the pumps and taking care, always having some mechanics on that, I want you, Netch, to send me exactly 100 hectoliters per hour.
Okay.
So they would just be paying for that.
For the service.
Exactly. Just for pushing that through. If they are over that, so similar to cloud, pay as you go.
Yeah.
If they're over that, they of course have to pay more on service agreements or in contracts. If they say, hey, we need less than that, we can scale it down as well and shut down the pump remotely. This could be an idea. Instead of just selling the pump, we would sell the service.
Okay, I think that the business been talking about that solution for years already. Mm-hmm. So do you think we are close to that? I mean, to the realization of the service itself?
We're working towards that. And you're completely right. So this idea has been floating around for at least a decade. But with the technology that's coming out now, having real-time data available, having a lot higher and more scalable sensors available, having the cloudification, this could become reality a lot sooner, and we are a lot closer to it than we were like 10 years ago.
What do you see as a significant game changer to make it happen?
Mainly it's the sensors, because mm-hmm. they are still quite pricey. We were also thinking of IoT solutions in the market, and we have actually sold some IoT solutions to the market, specifically for our pump systems division, in which we provided real-time monitoring, because some of our customers, they have the pumps installed in remote locations, like let's say a dam somewhere in the south of Brazil. Nobody's working there. It's somewhere in the jungle, basically. But we need to see if the pump is working or not, or if it's overheating, to shut it down remotely. So we've got some customers there for this one already. And it works for the larger pumps. For a smaller pump, it doesn't make sense if the sensor is like 2 times the price of the pump itself. Nobody would be buying that. So this is a challenge that we have right now.
If you are like halfway through this digital transformation, we can call it, what's your main KPIs for the journey?
So internally, we've been discussing success metrics quite heavily. So what we decided on is that we look into our front-end reporting, how much it is being used. So basically click rate. It's one of the easier ones. Because then we can show, hey, what we are building is actually being used by the business. And therefore, they don't have to get the data from SAP into Excel anymore, but it's all automated now. I think this is the most important KPI for us. Secondly, we're looking into our project times. So how long are we taking to deliver a project to kind of calculate the invest side that we have onto a different data product? Other success metrics are, of course, how much percent of our data do we have? It's always the data quality. How have we improved data quality? So it really depends on the use cases, but overall, we're looking into the adoption rate for our systems.
What are the most important lessons learned?
It's an interesting question, yeah. Very interesting question. Challenges that we had and lessons that we learned were that I was a bit impatient, maybe in the beginning, because I came from a larger organization and we had basically everything set up for the cloud already in my old company. It naturally didn't have that in the beginning. So cloudification, I said, okay, we had in the IT strategy. Strategy is one thing and making it come reality is another thing. So we had a lot of internal learnings first of how to scale out security topics, firewall issues that we needed to overcome that kind of blocked us in the beginning. Now this has basically been resolved. We have a new team there that's really taking care of cloud and quite happy with that. But the timelines that I was putting out that were realistic for a data team didn't match with the timelines that we had in an IT operations team. So this was one of the lessons learned that we had. Secondly, just because you say, hey, we are going to cloud and we can show some positive ROI, doesn't convince the managers directly. So while we as data people are always super passionate about the data, about the technology that's behind it, about different functionalities, about AI, about machine learning, and we know how to use the hype now, often we were talking a bit too technical for the business to understand. It's a beautiful journey of one of our data scientists. We hired him directly from academia, which is a field where you have to be very precise in what you're saying. Every single word matters. In business, it's more about marketing. It's more about selling the product. And his journey from going very deeply about the accuracy of the machine learning model that he's built, how different models would be comparing, to him just leaving out most of the work that he's been doing and really focusing on the business impact of what he's built is a remarkable and very beautiful journey.
Yeah, like the last in one sentence was the most important thing, right?
Exactly. Instead of writing an entire paper.
What advice would you give to the other enterprises on the same way?
the advice that I would give is see for yourself if you're on the verge of a decision whether to go into the cloud, which cloud provider to choose. Look into research institutes like Bark in Germany, like Gartner, like Forrester, the big ones. Mm-hmm. They always give a good baseline for your companies to see what the market looks like. Uh-huh. Basically, every hyperscaler is investing into cloud right now. So you won't see too much inventions coming in on-premise systems. There may be some parts where you need on-prem systems. I've talked to telecommunication companies. They have large data centers in which they store all of the video material, a lot cheaper if they go into the cloud. But for most enterprises, especially in manufacturing, it makes more sense to cloudify your entire infrastructure.
So this is Stefan Lautenschlager, Head of Business Intelligence and Analytics in Netsch. Stefan, thank you so much for sharing your insights from your interesting journey to the cloudification.
It was a pleasure, Ivana. Thank you so much.
Follow the Adastra Digital website on LinkedIn, Facebook, and most importantly, subscribe to this podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or Google. This is Iva Karhanová from Adastra, signing off.